My mother-in-law and my daughter-in-law are gone because I banned them. As I've already proven, I can become highly inappropriate when I'm nervous, so I apologize for anything that I say that I don't mean to say. I'll just say that right up front. You know, I was trying to think, why is this? It's not an embarrassing topic. It's just a very personal topic. And so we are reluctant. It's not something we speak about over the dining room table most of the time. So that's a bit of reluctance maybe for us to speak of it, but it's a very needed topic, and I think it was great. I did a show when I got this from Wayne. I showed it to John. I said, "Would you look and see what topic he's given me?" And he said, "Well, I don't know what you're going to say, but I'd be glad to help you with the research." Now, I'm going to tell you that I had his permission to tell y'all that. I would not have said that without, and it was not real happy permission, but it was reluctant permission, so don't tease him about it, but I thought it was kind of funny. I have to say, too, that, you know, please pardon the examples that I may use, because, and I promise I'm not going to be too personal, but, you know, my marriage is the only intimate relationship of that I've ever had, and that I hope to ever have. So it's just the experiences that I draw from. And so, you know, some of the questions that I had, I was not going to be comfortable taking a survey among men. That would not have been appropriate at all. But I had a book. There's this book. It's called For Women Only by Shanti Feldhahn. And I've used it for several years, and it's an excellent book. Of course, I'm not going to agree with everything that's in here, but she took surveys of lots of with lots of men and asked questions and got some honest responses that I'll be quoting from. So this is a really good book. It's an easy read. You can finish it even in one night. You know, it's just not real long, but I'll be referring to it quite a bit. She interviewed a lot of men that answered questions for me that I would not be comfortable, that I don't think it would be appropriate for me to go around asking men about. A few months ago, before our middle son, Jacob, became engaged to Alyssa, we were driving along in the car, and the song by Brad Paisley came on that was I Thought I Loved You Then. Have y'all heard that song? And John and I were in the front seat, and he reached over and grabbed my hand, and he said, "Jacob, you think you love her now?" And I thought, oh, that's really sweet. And it was really sweet. But I could see in the rearview mirror, the two of them looked at each other. They were a little bit, I don't want to say offended, but they were a little bit miffed, I think. And Jacob said, "I do. And I know he loves her, and I know she loves him. But, you know, when I look back over 27 years that we've almost been married, those of you who've been married a while, would you not agree that it just gets better? Show of hands, does it get better? It gets better from early marriage. It really does. It's far greater now than it was in 1986, and it was great then. So intimacy is a great topic, and it's a beautiful thing, and it's something that it's good for us to talk about. What is intimacy? The dictionary definition of intimacy is a close, familiar, and affectionate personal relationship. Now, I can have that with any of you in this room. I can have a close, personal, familiar, affectionate relationship. So intimacy is not always necessarily sexual. It is an act or an expression serving as a token of familiarity or affection, and it is also a sexual liberty. The word intimacy itself is not found in the ESV or the King James Version, but the word intimate is found two places in the ESV. In Job 19, verse 19, he speaks and says, "All of my intimate friends abhor me." And then in Psalm 7:4, it's also brought up. But then the Job 19 passage, the translation means familiar or someone that you're in fellowship with. So he was saying that all of his close, familiar friends hated him. And then if you look at the Greek translation of the Hebrew word, it means knowing or understanding through experience. And I really liked that, understanding through experience. So an intimate is someone who knows you. It's not always about a sexual relationship, but it's someone who knows you. And I have to tease Beth, because when she saw the topic and came and asked me about it, she said, "You know, there's a lot of people having sex, but there's not a lot of people who are intimate. And if you've ever heard her, Beth talk, I should get her to stand up and say that. And she knows I love her. But it's true. There's a lot of people that are having sex, but there's not a lot of people who are truly intimate. And there is a difference. The Bible does have quite a bit to say about marriage and the husband-wife relationship that most of us in this room, I'm sure, are familiar with. Ephesians 5, verses 22 and 23, talks about wives submitting to their husbands as to the Lord, and then it instructs husbands to love their wives as their own bodies. That's an intimate relationship. Then Genesis 2:24, going all the way back to the beginning of time, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. That's an intimate relationship. Turn and look at 1 Peter 3. We'll spend a lot of time in this passage during this hour, or during this 20 minutes if I finish it really fast and sit down. 1 Peter 3, beginning in verse 7, says, "Likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way." In the King James Version, says, "according to knowledge." "Showing honor or value to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." And then with regard to the sexual relationship, the Bible in Proverbs 5, verses 15 through 19, has a lot to say in that passage. But in particular, it says to rejoice with the wife of your youth, be intoxicated in her love. I like the way that says, to be intoxicated with the wife of your, with the love of the wife of your youth. Song of Solomon says a lot about the beauty of sexual love. And I like to think of it this way. It's portrayed as a beautiful and exciting escape. I love to think of it as an escape like that. Isn't it true? It's just a time when you can shut out the world and just focus on each other and not think about anyone else, not think about any of the problems or the stresses or the things that are going on in the world. Sexual intimacy is a time when you can focus on just one another, and I love thinking of it as an escape. The Bible also says, this is my personal favorite, in Song of Solomon 4, verses 1 and 2, it says, "Your hair is like a flock of goats leaping down the slopes of Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn ewes that have come up from the washing, all of which bear twins." I think apparently love languages were a little bit different back then. Because if John told me my hair was like a flock of goats and my teeth were like a flock of shorn ewes, I don't think that would be very flattering. But apparently that means that it's long and flowing and that she did not miss it, she had not lost any of her teeth. But I thought that was funny. I thought I'd throw that in there. But what speaks better to me in Song of Solomon 4, verse 9, he says, "You have captivated my heart with one glance of your eyes." I love that. And then in chapter 5, verse 4, it says, "My beloved put his hand to the latch, and my heart was thrilled within me." And I love that my heart still beats faster when I see my husband. It's a good thing. Chapter 7, verse 10 says, "I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me." What a beautiful, intimate relationship when his desire is for me. Let's look a little bit closer at what intimacy is. You can be thinking in your mind, too, and if you want to add something, if we have time, I'll ask for you to chip in your opinions. And I told some of my friends, if they sit too close, I'm going to ask them to answer questions. That's you, Shan Kay, right? Intimacy, first of all, is knowing the mind of your spouse. One of our elders, Bill Hyde, says that he would like to have a mind meld. And some of you Star Trek geeks can probably tell me, what is it, some kind of a little thing that you put? How do you do it? Put your fingers on their head. I know my husband would like to have a mind meld sometimes, just be able to put his hand on my head and know what I'm thinking. I would like that sometimes, too, for me to not have to try to explain how I'm feeling. But it was funny one time. He said, "I just need a mind meld to know what she's thinking." Knowing someone else's mind, it can be a little scary to think about that because it assumes a lot, and we have to be careful not to assume too much. But, you know, there's things that we know about our spouse. I know that John doesn't like to go to bed by himself. He just doesn't. He'd rather me come in there if I'm going to read or whatever. He doesn't want to go in there by himself. I know that's something about him that's intimate that no one else knows. And, again, I want to tell y'all that I ran all these things by him. I'm not going to be saying anything that he has not okayed. I don't want anyone to think that I would never want to purposely embarrass him. There's things that he knows about me that maybe not everyone knows. He knows that instead of bringing me flowers, I'd rather him put thought into something else because I kill flowers. and plants. And I really would prefer that he didn't spend the money on that. I'd rather get something else from him. Don't tell Bill that I brought him into that, Tara. You have to keep that to yourself. He would be mortified, I'm sure. I didn't know Tara was back there. Those things that we know, knowing the mind of our spouse, knowing what he likes and what he doesn't like, and for him to know what you like and don't like, just little things, that is intimacy. It means knowing those things about each other and respecting them, even if we don't agree. You know, it took him a long time to know that I don't want him to buy me flowers. He did not get it because every other woman he'd ever, his mother, girlfriends, they loved it when he brought him flowers. And I appreciated the thought, but it's just not something that I really was fond of. And so he didn't really agree with that I didn't like it. But once he learned that from me, then he was okay with it. So there's things that we're going to know about the mind of our spouse through experiences that makes it an intimate relationship. 1 Peter 3:7, again, he's to live with us in an understanding way, which is according to knowledge. Intimacy is also a closeness that you don't experience with very many people. Marital intimacy is a closeness that hopefully, prayerfully, you will only experience with one person for the rest of your life. Of course, there's things that happen, death or an unfaithful spouse that may happen that may change that. But it's a closeness that you don't experience with very many people at all. Intimacy is also an emotional interdependency. And all that means is that we're emotionally dependent on one another. Not that he's just dependent on me and I'm just dependent on him, but that we depend on each other. Sometimes being dependent on someone else is looked upon in a bad way. You know, you think of the world today, someone's called codependent if they depend on someone. But it's not always a bad thing. In marriage, a healthy dependency is a beautiful thing because it's shared together. It's not a one-way street, but we're each dependent on the other, and we look to our spouse to fulfill our emotional needs, and that's the way it should be. Genesis 2:18 says, God said, "It is not good that man shall be alone. I'll make him a helper fit for him." So God made us to help one another physically and emotionally. And then again, there's other passages like Amos 4:9, two are better than one. And if one falls down, the other is there to help pick him up. And then turn and look at Proverbs 17:17. This says, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. I struggled with understanding what that meant, and I still don't have a firm grasp, but a brother is born for adversity. When we have troubles and we have things going on in our lives, that's the role that our husband fills for us and that we fill for him, is when there's troubles that come along, we're able to lean on one another and depend on one another. Intimacy is also a willingness to be vulnerable. And this, I think, is especially difficult for men who need to be respected, because that's the way God built us. God built men to need to be respected, and he built women to need to be loved. And when we fulfill those roles the way God intended, then that's going to be an intimate, happy marriage. Some men feel that by showing vulnerability, we will not respect them as much. And when I was reading this off to John one night, he nodded hard at this. He said, some fear that by showing vulnerability, we will not respect them as much. So I think a lot of men feel like if they show vulnerability, whether it's in a sexual relationship or just in an emotional way, and I asked him in what ways, and he said with your emotions and in prayer. You know, men show vulnerability when they pray with us, and especially if it's just the two of us in an intimate situation. Prayer shows vulnerability, and some men are afraid to do that. But I think truthfully, showing vulnerability only endears them to us. I know it does for me. One of the quotes from this book says, the only time a guy's guard is completely down is with the woman he loves, so she can pierce his soul like no one else. So let's be careful not to pierce his heart and his soul by taking advantage of his vulnerability. It's not being afraid of showing emotions, being willing to listen when the other is wanting to share. And again, Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loveth at all times, even when we're showing vulnerability. He trusts us to not, I don't want to say tease. I can't imagine, I guess some women might tease their husbands about their vulnerability. But he trusts us with his emotions. And leading into that, intimacy is a trust that we as wives and that our husbands will see us and take us at our worst and love us anyway. Another quote from the book. One man said, I want my wife to know and understand my weaknesses, failings. shortcomings and still want me. I need her to be my number one source of encouragement to become the man God created me to be. So he needs us to be an encouragement. He trusts us to be an encouragement. It's also a trust that our secrets won't be revealed to someone else and that we're not going to laugh and joke about private things. And Tracy, I get the deer in the headlights look there, but I was thinking, trying to think of an example of this. And when Katie was born, Tracy had carpal tunnel. And she could not wash her hair and couldn't dry her hair. So Robert had to do that for her. And I get tickled anytime I think about Robert trying to do Tracy's hair because he'd be the last person in the world to be able to do anyone's hair. But, you know, there's things like that that are far more intimate than washing and drying of hair that our husbands sometimes take care of for us and that we take care of for him. And we trust one another not to take advantage of that, not to talk about it to anyone else and not to make any fun of it. We trust each other with needs and emotions and physical limitations or expressions that we trust no other person with. And that, to me, is very one of the things that I treasure the most. There's things about me that no one else in the whole wide world knows but John. And there's things that I know about him that no one else knows. And that is an intimate marriage, and I love that. It's something that I wouldn't trade anything for. Intimacy is also a demonstration of love or evidence of love. It's you wanting your husband in a sexual relationship. Here's a quote. Intimacy is the clearest way, and this is talking about the sexual relationship, it's the clearest way she can say, you are more important to me than anything else in the world. It's a form of communication that speaks more forcefully with less room for interpretation than any other. I thought that was true. It speaks more forcefully with less room for interpretation or misinterpretation than any other. Then intimacy is also sharing experiences. There's those little fun private jokes that you have between each other, the remember wins that come from a long association that you know and that no one else knows. Then intimacy is the sexual relationship that is God's gift to husbands and wives. You know, I was doing the studying and preparing for this, and it seems like there's a lot more said in God's word by way of warning misusing the sexual relationship than there is in direction of how to enjoy the sexual relationship. You think about it, there's a lot of passages that talk about adultery and fornication and how to watch out for these women or watch out for these men that are going to take advantage of that. So it seems to be that there's less of that, less direction. But Hebrews 13:4 says, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. You know, every time I read this verse before, I had read it. Well, in the King James, it says, let marriage... Someone have the King James? How does it work? It's worded a little bit differently. In the ESV, it says, let the marriage bed be undefiled. I think in the King James, it says, and the marriage bed is undefiled. And so I had always thought of it, and it had been presented to me as anything that goes on in the marital bedroom is fine. That's just kind of how I'd always looked at it. But when I looked at it a little bit more closely, it says, let the marriage bed be undefiled. It's kind of a more forceful, proactive saying, you keep this bed undefiled. This is just between the two of you. You don't bring anyone else into this relationship. You don't send yourself out on any other relationship in your marriage. So I think it's interesting to look at that a little bit more closely. There's other passages. Of course, the whole book of Song of Solomon that I won't take a whole lot of time to read out of that. But Proverbs 5, verses 15 through 19. Here's proof that God intended for the sexual relationship to be enjoyed between a man and a woman. It says, let her breast satisfy you. Why else would God say that in his word if it were not a gift between a husband and a wife? And then again, there are parts of the human anatomy that cannot be explained for any other reason except for enjoyment. Why would God create something and say that what he created was good if he did not intend for it to be enjoyed between a husband and a wife? So intimacy is the sexual relationship that's God's gift. A few warnings. We should not have this emotional intimacy with anyone if we do not have the right to the sexual intimacy with that same person, because this is how unfaithfulness can begin. And we've all seen it. We've seen how maybe a husband at work begins confiding in his assistant or some coworker there confiding about how he's not close to his wife anymore. Or maybe you've seen a woman who's reconnected with an old boyfriend from high school online and started talking to him again. And that's how having that emotional intimacy and talking about things that we shouldn't talk about with them is what leads to unfaithfulness. Look at Proverbs 6:27 when you have time. It relates to that. Something else to think about? Sexual intimacy in marriage, of course, is the reward of emotional intimacy. It's a reward of emotional intimacy. Because without emotional intimacy, sex is just a physical act. And think about this. That's what's so sad about what the world portrays. You know, everywhere you see what the world portrays, you know, that sex is so wonderful, but it's a fraud and it's a shell of what it could be. It's empty and meaningless, and there's no soul-to-soul closeness with these one-night stands that you see. The world may think it's experiencing what they call great sex, but it's only physical. And without the emotional intimacy and God's blessing, it's only physically gratifying instead of reaching the height that God intends for it to reach. Okay, I'm going to get out of order. John said I needed to cover these things first. If I had time, then I could get to the rest. But building intimacy. How can we build intimacy? And in a minute, we'll talk about things that we do to sabotage it, but I want to save that for last. How do we build intimacy? One of the things that we can do to build intimacy with our husbands is just basic kindness and encouragement. There's a story of a woman who called a crisis counselor and complained to the counselor about her husband and said, "My husband loves that dog more than he loves me." And the counselor said, "Well, tell me, what does the dog do when he comes home?" "Well, she jumps up and down and licks him and is happy to see him and yips and yaps and just makes a big fuss over him." And the counselor said, "Well, what do you do when he comes home?" "Well, I keep doing whatever I'm doing." So the counselor said, "Well, maybe why don't you try doing some of the same things that your dog is doing when your husband comes home and see what happens?" So he told her for the next 30 days, just make an effort to do some of those same things. So when he came home, she would go and greet him and hug him and make a fuss over him, bring him a glass of tea maybe, and just say, I'm glad you're here." And so the crisis counselor called her back a month later and said, "Well, how's the dog?" And she said, "Well, the dog's on the floor now. She used to jump up in my husband's lap when he got home, but now I'm the one sitting in my husband's lap." You know, basic kindnesses are things that our husbands enjoy and the things that we can do to lead to a more intimate relationship. Just bring him a cup of coffee, wash his clothes, hug him when he comes home, send him an I love you text during the day, fix his favorite meal, or do things for him without his asking. Even basic things like thanking him when he takes you out for a meal. Be thoughtful about the things that he likes. And, you know, I was preparing this, and I can know, because I think this way too, that some of you are out there thinking, "Well, he doesn't do those things for me. He doesn't do that for me. Why should I do it for him?" But Jesus said, "As you would have others to do for you, do also to them. You are the one that can continue a vicious cycle of retaliation, or you can create a new, happier cycle. It's not going to happen overnight. It may take a week. It may take a month. It may take a long time. Because it takes a long time to start a new habit, doesn't it? But you do want to be happy, don't you? And this affects your very own happiness, not just his. 1 John 4:19 says that we loved him because he first loved us. And think about that. We love God because he loved us. Can't we apply that to our marriages? And if our husbands, we don't feel like he loves us very much, but if we show love to him and treat him the way that God wants us to treat others that we love, doesn't it follow that he's going to love us back when we love him like he needs to be loved? You know, there's always going to be times when this doesn't work or when we want to throw up our hands, but it's worth a try, isn't it? Philippians 2:3-5 certainly applies to marriages. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Look to the interest of your husband. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus. Why? Because he took on the form of a servant. We can do this for our husbands. He may not do it for us. No, you're right. He might not. But we can do it for him because it's the right thing to do. One man in this book said about encouragement and romance, he says, encourage me and affirm my efforts, and I'll run through a brick wall to please you. But don't just assume that I know you're pleased. I'm way outside my comfort zone. I'm willing to be a fool for you, but just tell me that I did good. Sometimes we got to just tell them that they did good, don't we? Another way to build intimacy is to know his love language. We've all heard about the book, Gary Chapman's book. There's five different love languages, and I think we fit into all of these categories, but you don't have to buy the book to take the test. You can go online and take the test. But there's words of affirmation, and there's, how much time is there? Am I running out of time? Ooh. Okay, there's words of affirmation, there's physical touch, there's acts of service, there's quality time, and there's receiving gifts. And a lot of us will fit into more than one category, but if you take the test, it's interesting to see one or two things will start popping out more. I'm physical touch and quality time is what I find myself falling into. It can be bad when we expect our husband to speak the same love language. Like if you prefer acts of service, you expect him to like acts of service, but he might not speak the same love language. So if you try to do something for him and he doesn't respond the way you would respond if it were done for you, then we get a little angry, don't we? Because we don't understand, I'm doing this for you. But no, we need to learn his love language. And again, you know, this may seem to be all about what I am doing for him. And, you know, yeah, they do need to have lessons about intimacy. Men do need to learn about how to treat women. I do totally agree with that. But if you invest in your marriage, invest your time in your marriage, you will reap the dividends. If you do these things for your husband, you're going to end up being happy too. It's good for you. Another area that where we can build intimacy is making an effort to be attractive. Now, this is a touchy subject, I know. There's a chapter in the book called The Truth About the Way You Look. And I'm not kidding. These are the first words in that chapter. It says, warning, before you read any further, pray first. It's that, it's just a touchy subject among us, isn't it? And I'll just be honest with you. A few years ago, I read this book in preparation for a marriage enrichment weekend that we did. And I was about 75 pounds heavier at the time. And when I was rereading this book in preparation for this lesson, I came across something that was very interesting, eye-opening, startling to me. I don't know if you probably can't see it, but I have marked up and highlighted and dog-eared a lot of pages. I had not read that chapter. Didn't even crack it. And it, you know, it's hard for me to explain. I think I just was in denial. I did not want to know how the way I looked affected my husband. We all want to point to the for better or for worse and remind ourselves that God looks on the heart and not on our outward appearance. But our husband needs to know that we're trying to take care of ourselves and that we care how we look to him. And really think about it, you know, he's between a rock and a hard place, isn't he? Because he loves us the way we are, but he also wants us to take care of ourselves, and he wants us to try to make ourselves look attractive for him. But he can't say anything without getting his head bitten off, you know? It's like that commercial for Geico with Abraham Lincoln. Does this make my rear end look big? And he's kind of doing that little, that's a hilarious commercial, I think. Isn't it the truth? But our husbands, they want to be able to do things with us, hiking and bicycling. And if we're not in shape of some sort, we're not able to do it. He loves to be proud of the way we look, not necessarily all about how much we weigh or the color of our hair, but just that we try to look neat and maybe get out of our sweatpants every once in a while or comb our hair or maybe brush our teeth a little bit more. Just make an effort. And this is something to think about. Our appearance on Sunday reflects how we feel about God, reflects our respect for him. We take care to try to look good, not because we're trying to put on a show for anyone else, but we're showing our respect for God. Do we not need to show respect for our husbands and the way that we appear to him? No, God doesn't love you any more or less because of your weight or appearance. In fact, we often overemphasize our appearance, 1 Peter 3. But our bodies belong to God. We need to take care of them. And I'll just say this. As far as weight loss goes, everything is better. I'm just going to leave it at that. Everything is better. It can affect your self-confidence. It can affect your health. It affects the way you see yourself and the way you see your husband. Taking care of yourself is worth it. Growing spiritually together is a way to build intimacy. And then there's little practical ways. Don't want to embarrass anybody, but this is the nitty-gritty. You know, you can leave something in his closet, a candle, that he knows what that means. That's a way to build intimacy. There may be some little code language that you have between yourself. We have one. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if he sees it come across his phone in the day, he knows what I'm saying. Building intimacy means taking time away from the kids. It means planning rendezvous. It means leaving little notes on his desk, being very careful where you leave them and what you say, and knowing that someone else might come across it. It's candlelit dinners. It's buying a new nightgown, maybe not because, you know, you have to have one, but because he sees that you care what you look like to him, and you're thinking about that. You're thinking about him during the day. That builds intimacy. Buy the book called The Act of Marriage and read it. It's eye-opening. It's a good book. So there's lots of little things. I have to throw that in there. And I knew this was going to happen. But there's ways that we sabotage our intimacy. And, you know, we crave it so badly. We want it, but then we sabotage it. And the ways that we do that, I'll never forget when Jordan and Jacob were little, we were living here in San Marcos. And John was so busy working. He was taking night classes. A lot of things going on. He was working at McCarty. And I wanted him home. And I resented that he was not home. And so I became angry because he wasn't home. And when he finally got home, I was angry. And so the very thing that I wanted when he got home, for him to be home, I was sabotaging. And when it finally smacked me in the face, what are you doing, Carla? Why are you angry when he's finally home? Why are you wasting the time that he's here with being angry with him? It was eye-opening. So let's not sabotage the very thing that we want. And we can sabotage intimacy by being overly critical and judgmental, otherwise known as nagging. I just have to fly through these. We have high expectations. You ever experience this? You may have an expectation of how a date night is going to go or how he's going to treat you, and it ends up being completely opposite from what you expected it was going to be. That sabotages intimacy by having too high expectations. Anger. Nothing kills intimacy faster than anger. How can you be close and enjoy intimacy when you're angry with someone? And it's a choice. I tell you, it's a choice. Sunday morning, John called me a slacker. I won't go into the whole story about it, but I was not being a slacker. He called me a slacker. And he was partly teasing, but I sat there and I felt the steam rising, and I thought, okay, I have a choice here. I can get mad or I can just blow it off, because I really know up here, I know that he didn't mean anything by it, but down here is where it hurts, right? So you have to make a choice if you're going to be angry or if you're not going to be angry. Ephesians 4:26, be angry and sin not. Proverbs 12:16, a fool's wrath is presently known. We can make fools out of ourselves by becoming angry when we shouldn't. Then distractions and interruptions. If you have children, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Nothing can kill intimacy faster than, you know, having a nice candlelit room and soft music, and then, ding, your phone goes off, and you want to look at it. Turn the technology off. It's very important during emotional and sexual intimacy. If you're having a nice emotional talk with one another, you don't want that phone interrupting it. Put a lock on your door if you have kids. And then hormones is another intimacy killer, and I won't say anything more about that because it's frustrating enough for them to try to understand our moods when we can't even understand our moods. But this is something we have to be able to admit, that there is a problem with our hormones. We have to say, admit, okay, John, I'm sorry. I know that today I'm hormonal. Tomorrow this won't be as big of a deal. But don't we just want to say, this is not hormones. You know, we want to say, don't you dare accuse me of being hormonal. But we have to be a big enough person to admit that sometimes that's what is going to cause it. So, now that I'm all out of order, do your best to build intimacy and not kill intimacy, and value the gift that God has given you between you and your husband, and treat it as a gift and not as a chore and not as a liability. But be happy with the husband that you've chosen, that God's blessed you with. And you be the type of person that you need to be and treat him the way God wants you to treat him. And you will benefit from it, I promise. Thank you for your attention.